This sermon topic was what transpired this last weekend, which was just horrible, where this fella goes into the movie theater and starts shooting everybody. What would literally possess you to do that? What would make you want to do that? Certainly isn't even a natural human. I mean, well, we get angry and we get upset and we may get resentful and we may want to get back at somebody or whatever. But to just do it wantonly with no reason is not even a normal human thing. What would be behind that kind of thinking? What would make a person perform this way? Well, obviously, the individual has some difficulties, mental difficulties, but it goes back to a more tragic situation that began way before man was on the earth. And I'd like you to turn to John, the 8th chapter, because I want to entitle the sermon simply Murder. Murder is something that began before man was on the earth, as I said, and it got me thinking about this particular subject, and it got me thinking about this verse here in John, the 8th chapter, and I've read over it, and I kind of puzzled a little bit at it. Every time I read it, I hadn't really studied into it or thought about it that much, but it did kind of puzzle me a little bit. Notice here in verse 44, he's talking to the Pharisees, and he's telling them that they're not willing to listen to the truth, and he's telling them that they are of their father, the devil, and that Abraham listened to the truth, and he did the truth, and Christ was telling them the truth, but they didn't want to believe him. When he tells the truth, they would much rather believe a lie. And he's trying to show them that they were being influenced by Satan rather than by God. Okay, verse 44, he said, "You are of," in other words, "you're a follower of your father, the devil." Now, that's pretty strong. "And the lusts of your father you will do." So he's saying that Satan had certain lusts within him. And we're going to explore those lusts, which leads to murder. And he said, "Your father is the devil." In other words, you're being inspired and directed by Satan the devil. "He was," now this is interesting, why, and this is what I puzzled over. "He was a murderer from the beginning, and he abode not in the truth, because there was no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it." In other words, he's the original liar. God's not a liar, but Satan was. And there wasn't any truth in him, but have you ever asked yourself the question, he was a murderer from the beginning? Who did he murder in the beginning? Who was getting murdered? He didn't murder angels. He didn't murder Adam and Eve. Why did Christ call him a murderer from the beginning and the father of lies, the original liar? It's an interesting question. And we'll find out here today why Christ identified Satan as a murderer from the beginning. All right, let's look into Satan's background here, and let's go to Isaiah 14. We'll reveal to us the inner thinking of Satan. And, of course, our human nature can relate to this, and, of course, Satan has deceived the whole world, as we read in Revelation 12:9. He's influencing. He is the God of this world, and he influences people very, very strongly. And if you look at what's happening around us, some of the examples I just mentioned, this man going off wanting to kill people for no reason, people ignoring what the principles of this country stand for. And I mean, what's the biggest main premise of the United States? Why did people leave England and Europe and flee to this country? Freedom of religion. And the mayors get up and say, you're not welcome here because we don't agree with what you believe. That is outrageous. Just totally outrageous. But that's the way Satan has influenced the world, and he's going to keep influencing it. And that's the way it'll go eventually. And all the prophecies show it, that they will control people. You must do this, and you must believe that. And if you don't do these things, and if you don't believe these things, well, then you're just going to be out of luck. We might just kill you, besides not being able to buy or sell, which is a rather inconvenient situation to be in. All right. Chapter 14 in Isaiah, this gives us an insight in how Satan thinks and why Christ said he was a murderer from the beginning, because we have to do a little thinking about this. He said, verse 11, your pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of your vials and the worm is spread under you and the worms over you. In other words, eventually, he's referring to a man here, but he's also referring to Satan very clearly. Verse 12. How are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Now we know that's Satan. Son of the morning. How are you cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? And he's asking, how in the world did this happen to you? Here you were, created with all this power, this glory, set right up there near God on the throne, and now you're being cut down and, you know, destroyed eventually. And, well, not literally destroyed, but brought down to nothing. Verse 13, for you have said, now this is the thinking of Satan the devil, you have said in your heart, this is how Satan thinks, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. That's where God the Father is. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. I will replace God. Yet you shall be brought down to hell, or down to the grave, to the sides of the pit. And we know what transpires with Satan at the end. But, of course, Satan still thinks somehow he might be able to win, and he keeps trying. The bottom line here is that if you first of all lust, remember what we read there, Christ said you are of your father the devil and his lust. He's lusting after the Father's position. He wants to be God. Now, this is nothing new. Well, it was new when it happened with Satan. But in this world, it's not new. Not new at all. Have you ever been or studied anything about the successions of the kings and queens in England? Well, if a couple of times that we've been to the feast over there, we went on a castling tour. After a few days, I didn't want to see another castle. But the history was fascinating. More people lost their heads, got chopped off, you know, beheaded. Why? because somebody wanted their position. They wanted to be the leader. They wanted to be the king. And I remember in this one particular castle, it's too gross to mention now or here, but they came up with a way of inside the castle. Of course, these castles have these big, thick walls, 6 feet thick and whatever, all stone. Of killing this person without leaving any marks on the outside of his body so that they would be able to claim, oh, he just died. But they wanted his position. They wanted his power. Now, if you want somebody's position and power and you lust after that, then you develop hatred for that person because he has what you want. And you have only one choice. You can't be the guy or the woman. You can't be the one in charge if that person is still alive. So you got to get rid of that person. It's kind of like the mob, you know. You get out in New Jersey, New York, they have a term. They go like this. You're going to get pinched. That means you're going to get wiped out. You don't play the game, they do away with you. You get a set of cement shoes and you end up on the bottom of the ocean or wherever, or you find yourself in the trunk of a car or dead, whatever. Bottom line is, if you get in the way of what a person is looking for as far as power is concerned, then you are now the object, the hated object, and the person who needs to be removed. Satan looked at God and said, I want to be God. I want to be in that position. I want to sit on the throne. Well, you can't have two gods. You can't have two people in charge. So you got to get rid of God. Satan became a murderer because he lusted and then he hated God. And he continues to hate God. And of course, hating is murder, because God looks at the attitude of the people, as we'll see. And so Satan had to attempt to get rid of God, if that's comprehensible. I mean, if you want something badly enough like that, then you develop this hatred and resentment, and your objective is to get rid of them. Go to Ezekiel, the 28th chapter. This goes along with Isaiah, Ezekiel 28. I'm sure you all know, are familiar with this. But it's good to review it and look at it and think about it, because this is the being that is the God of this world. This is the one who would annihilate you and me if he was allowed to. He's not allowed to. But he would if he were given the permission to do it. He can only do what God allows him to do, which really makes him even more upset. Okay, verse 2, it says, Son of man, say to the prince of Tyrus, thus says the Lord, because your heart is lifted up, and this is what happened to Satan. He began to have or become filled with pride. Well, I am pretty good. Not only am I pretty good, I'm very good. Well, I'm not just very good, I'm just as good. Well, I'm even better. I'm better than God. Because your heart is lifted up and you have said, I am a God, I will sit in the seat of God. Remember, in order to do that, you have to get rid of God. You have to murder or kill or annihilate some way, eliminate the great God. I will sit in the seat of God in the midst of the seas, yet you are a man and not God, and of course he is a combination here, he's talking about the king, though you set your heart as the heart of God Go over to verse 5 here. By your great wisdom and by your traffic have you increased your riches, and your heart was lifted up because of your riches, because of all the things God had created within you. You were lifted up, and you, he said, began to really think greatly and highly of yourself. You began to be filled with pride. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, because you have set your heart as the heart of God, and then he goes on to say how he would be destroyed and done away with. Drop down to, end of verse 12. He said, thus says the Lord, you seal up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. That's how God created him. And you have been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. And he lists off all these different beautiful precious stones. The workmanship of the tabrets and of your pipes was prepared in you in the day that you were created. So this person or this being was created, and now he wants to take over the Creator's responsibility and position and get rid of him. You are an anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so. You were upon the holy mountain of God. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Interestingly, he describes this is about God's throne. And, of course, fire is a purifying thing, and you have to be a spirit being to walk up and down in the midst of the stones of fire, although I guess some people on the news were trying to walk on coals. Not everybody made that one, but you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created. So God created Satan perfect. He didn't create him evil. Till iniquity was found in you. Verse 17, your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted your wisdom by reasoning of your brightness. So he had a lot of power, beauty, responsibility. I will cast you to the ground. I will lay you before kings that they may behold you. So this is an insight into the way Satan thinks. But remember, if you want to take somebody's position, and the history of England and kings and queens in Europe is long and bloody. They were always chopping somebody's head off. It's just incredible. One story after another. And when you're actually there and you see them, you know, you see the places where all this happened, and you stand there, you realize this is craziness. But one person be in charge and they'd be in power, and then some other person, some other relative or whatever, decide they wanted that thing, and so they would figure out a way to get rid of the king and get his head chopped off or murder him some way, and then they would move in, and then, of course, that made all kinds of other enemies, and then they'd get their head chopped. I mean, it just kept going. It was awful. Not good. Let's go to Luke, the 10th chapter. Now, Satan attempted this initially. This is not Satan being cast down to the earth the final time, but this is the initial fall. And, of course, you remember Job, and when all the sons of God came, all these spirit beings came before the Lord, and God asked Satan, and I just get a kick out of that one. He asked Satan, where have you been? And Satan goes, going to and fro on the earth, sarcastically saying, where in the world do you think I've been? That's where you sent me, down to the earth. So I've been walking around down there on the earth, just where, where I have no choice except to be. And verse 18, and he said to them, this is Luke 10 and verse 18, Christ is, well, verse 17, let's start there. And the 70 returned again with joy, saying, Lord, even the devils are subject unto us through your name. And we've talked a little bit about that in the past. And he said to them, I beheld Satan as lightning falling from heaven. So in the initial war or conflict where Satan did try to take over, he got thrown down to the earth. He said, behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Notwithstanding, in this don't rejoice that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. And that's what we need to be focused on. As Christ did, he prayed for Peter, as we know, because Satan asked Christ and asked God for the authority or the okay to do with Peter as he wanted. He wanted to sift him as wheat. And Christ prayed for Peter and gave him protection. And then in the final prayer just before he was crucified, he also prayed for all of us, everyone that would be called in the future. We need protection. Satan is real. He's there. And look what he's doing to this world and how he influences people and how he twists their mind. I mean, you have to be mentally twisted to walk into a movie theater with red hair and semi-automatic gun and just start shooting people. For no reason. I mean, you got to be a nutcase. And that's not even a normal human thing to do. I mean, it's one thing to be angry and, you know, I'll get you and have resentment and trying to get even. That's one thing. That is a normal human carnal thing. But to do what he did is just satanic. So, Satan lost his initial battle. Now, this did not make him happy. He still thinks somehow, because he has a lot of power, and he has a lot of power behind him. He's got a third of the angels behind him, and they're all perverted and twisted to one degree or another as well. And he still thinks somehow he's going to be able to wage war against God and take over and get rid of that evil, terrible God the Father. Well, let's go to Revelation 12 and verse 1. And again, this is something we're all pretty familiar with. But once again, it does show us what he said, and there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun. Clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Okay, that represented the 12 apostles and the kingdom coming in the future. And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. And verse 3, and there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his head. And of course, we know that's the description at the end time. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which were ready to be delivered, for devour the her child as soon as it was born, and she brought forth the man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and the child was caught up unto God to his throne, which is where Christ is today, and simply waiting to return and to take his rightful position and to get rid of this mess that we're in. But it's got to play out. And then, of course, talks about the woman or the church fleeing. And then later on, that great dragon, verse 9, which was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And then he talks about him in verse 10, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accuses us before God day and night. And in verse 12, it talks about woe to the inhabitants of the earth, for the devil has come down to you having a short time, and he is filled with wrath, and he knows he doesn't have much time left. And of course, he's going to continue to try to take over. He will through the and it talks about this in Daniel. He will try to confront Christ when he returns with his army. At the end time, he's going to be allowed to have great power. He will persecute the church. He will overcome the saints. He will be allowed to do this for a short period of time. He will be running things. You believe and do what he says, or you're out of here. You're going to be killed. You're going to be excommunicated, exiled, whatever the punishments will be. But the world is going to have to play his game. And he will have that power, and he will succeed for a while. And by that time, I'm sure he will be all pumped up, thinking, I'm ready to take on Christ. And Christ comes back, and he fights against Christ in his return, as we know. And of course, he loses, and he's thrown into the bottomless pit. Oh my, I can't wait for that time to come. This is getting to be overwhelming. Let's go to Genesis, the third chapter. Looks like we'll have a little shorter sermon here today. Genesis, the third chapter. Again, talks about, in chapter 2, it talks about the two trees and what God told Adam and Eve that they could eat of and what they shouldn't eat of. Now, here's an important principle for you to understand. Why didn't Satan just come in and destroy Adam and Eve? Just kill them. He had the power to do that. He was strong enough to do it. Certainly, he can do all kinds of things. He can bring fire down out of heaven, which he will do in the future. He can do a certain number of miracles and impress people. Why didn't he just destroy Adam and Eve and get rid of this program or this plan that God had in mind? Well, because God wouldn't allow it. God would not allow Satan to destroy Adam and Eve. Otherwise, Satan would have. Just understand that. He would destroy you and me if God allowed it. He does not like us. He hates us. He hates us as much as he hates God because we're following God. Now, he's deceived the whole world. And of course, he doesn't like even the people in the world, even though he has them all deceived and going and playing his tune. But they are the creation and the result of God's doing. They are something that God has produced, and so he hates all mankind. And eventually his decision, or his desire, I should say, is to destroy. And if he had his way, then he'll come close to doing this, as the prophecy says. Hand the world back to God as a smoking cinder, with no mankind left on the earth. And Christ said, Matthew 24, if Christ didn't come back at the last minute, that's exactly what would happen. There would be no flesh saved alive. Satan would totally destroy mankind from the face of the earth and destroy the whole thing, and then, okay, my time's up. Here you go, God. I'm taking them all with me. But Christ will come back and stop that from happening. Otherwise, it would happen. That is Satan's objective. So we need to realize how much we're protected here and how much God guides and directs things way more than most people realize. Satan can only do as much as God allows, and as time gets closer to the end, the Bible is clear, Satan is going to have more and more power and more flexibility, and he's going to be allowed to accomplish a lot of the things that he wants to do. And he will kind of get used to being the God of the world, because everybody will be looking up to him and everybody will be dancing to his tune. And if you don't, well, then you're out of the picture. All right, he couldn't destroy Adam and Eve. Well, what did he do then? How did he try to destroy Adam and Eve? And actually, he did destroy them. He got them to sin. He deceived them. And they sinned themselves, and so they brought the sin or the penalty of death upon themselves. A murderer from the beginning. He entered the snake. He appeared in the Garden of Eden, which of course God allowed. And what was his intention? He wasn't just trying to get Adam and Eve to just follow him. If he had his way, he would destroy them. And his objective was to destroy them. But he wasn't allowed to destroy them, so he said to himself, I'll get them to destroy themselves. And I will deceive them and get them to disobey God, which will automatically bring the penalty of death upon them. And so, in a sense, he murdered them. And that was his objective. It wasn't just kind of a cute thing. You see the, you know, little cartoon or whatever, Adam and Eve and the apple and the snake wrapped around the tree or whatever. This was a very sinister plot to destroy Adam and Eve. That was what Satan's objective was, because it represents God's plan, the beginning, the very first human beings created eventually to become like God. That was what he was trying to accomplish. Notice in Numbers 22, and this supports this in writing here. Numbers, the 22nd chapter, and verse 18. And this is the thing of Balaam, and when the donkey talked to him and all that. I'm not going through that whole story, but Balaam was asked by Balak to produce a curse on Israel. And Balaam's answer in verse 18 of chapter 22 of Numbers said, "And Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, 'If Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold,'" in other words, give me everything you have and everything you own, "I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more." I can't change God's word. God set the limits. God said you can go this far and no further. That's it. I can't change that. That's why Christ said the demons and so on were subject, because Satan attempted and revealed how he really felt, tried to take over the throne. He was cast down to the earth like lightning, and he lost, which he always will do. He still thinks he can win, but at least he's going to keep trying. But as far as God's concerned, he wasn't allowing Satan to do anything to Adam and Eve, or to do things to us, which he would like to do, or to any of God's people, or eventually even the whole world and mankind, which represents God's creation. So he said, look, I can't do any more or any less than what God says. And that's what we need to understand. God is in charge. God has the power. Satan doesn't, there's no battle, there's no contest, although Satan keeps trying to have a contest. But there's no contest between God and Satan. When God says this is the way it is, that's the way it is. And there's nothing Satan can do about it, nor anybody else. And it's only when God opens it up, and when you read the prophecies there at the end time, it uses these terms that Satan is allowed. In other words, the beast and the false prophet are given that power. They're given or allowed to prevail over the saints. They're allowed to do these things. They're not allowed to do that right now, but they will be in the right towards the end. Then you'll see just how nice Satan is. And it won't be very pleasant. And we're already getting little tastes of these things. I mean, I just can't believe what was said, in that the whole country is in an uproar over what these ignorant mayors said. They're ignorant. And they're rebellious. And they are disregarding the whole principle and the whole premise of this country and what it was founded on. But of course, we know that's going to happen. Just really, really upsets me. I could say stronger things, but I won't. Incredible. All right. How does God look at this thing of murder? Go to Deuteronomy 19. And then we'll end here with Christ's explanation. But Deuteronomy 19 is rather interesting, because this very clearly reveals how great the great God looks at murder. From what point of view? He has two viewpoints of it. Okay, chapter 19 of Deuteronomy. He talks about when you take over the land, and he said, you're going to be dwelling in these cities and in the houses that you are going to capture. Verse 2, he said, you shall separate three cities for you in the midst of your land, which the Lord your God gives you to possess. Verse 3, you shall prepare thee a way and divide the coasts of your land, which the Lord your God gives you to inherit, into three parts, and that every slayer may flee there. Now, he'll explain this. And this is the case of the slayer which shall flee there, that he may live. Now, why would he be setting aside three cities so that someone who murders, or not murders, but kills, would have a place to escape so he can continue living? Whosoever kills his neighbor ignorantly, God looks at the heart, whom he hated not, in other words, he didn't hate this neighbor, he was a friend. They were out working together in time past. In other words, he never had any hatred or resentment towards this neighbor. And he gives an example. And when a man goes into the woods, for example, and many of us have done this, I certainly have in the past, cut and split firewood. I know when we were living in New Jersey, it was a family activity, and one that my boys and I enjoyed. We had a fellow there in the church who was a tree trimmer, and there are lots of trees in New Jersey. They grow like crazy out there because it's a little warmer than it is here. So he was constantly trimming these trees for people, and he needed a place to get rid of the wood. So he would drop it off in the front yard, and we would take it and cut it all up and then split it by hand. We didn't have a log splitter. We had a log splitter, but it was an axe. And we'd cut and split about 5 cords a winter, and we were pretty much heating the house with our little wood stove down in the basement. You open up, you know, you put it in the basement, the heat naturally flows up the stairs, the cold air flows down the stairs, and it's just a natural circulation. Those of you, my mom remembers this, she used to come home in the wintertime and stand over the heat vent. Okay, you have a big grate sitting in the middle of the floor. Well, it was just a natural convection, because down in the basement was the furnace, and the heat came up, and then, of course, all the cold air would just naturally pour down into the basement, and get reheated, so you had this constant circulation. Well, anyway, that was our activity. The deal was we cut and split the wood. Artists would get up and get things going in the morning, get the kids ready for school. I would stick my toe out of the bed when it was warm. But she enjoyed starting the fire. We would bring in all the wood for her and made sure it was easy for her. And then she became a pretty good fire maker. So don't let her get near a set of matches or whatever. But anyway, she did a good job. And we had a lot of fun, got good exercise. And it's a case here where these guys were out there doing that. They're out in the woods, and they're cutting down these trees. And his hand fetches a stroke. In other words, he's swinging his axe, and the head of the axe comes off. And I'll just put it into modern language here. And it flies through the air, and it hits his neighbor, and it kills him. Okay, now he didn't hate this neighbor. They were out there working together. He shall flee unto one of these cities, lest the avenger of blood, some relative who gets all bent out of shape about this, pursue the slayer while his heart is hot, really angry, and overtake him because the way is long, and slay him, whereas he is not worthy of death, insomuch as he hated him not in times past. He never hated this person. It was a true accident. Wherefore, I command you that you shall separate three cities for that situation. However, and this protects him, and he's talking about keeping the commandments and so on. Verse 11, on the other side of the coin, if any man hate his neighbor. Now, see, way back here in the Old Testament, even though it said murder, you know, you shall not kill, it still went to the heart. God still was looking at the attitude. It still had a spiritual component. It wasn't just a mechanical thing that you could hate your neighbor, but just don't kill him. He didn't say that. He said, but if any man hate his neighbor and lie in wait for him to get revenge and vengeance on him, he hates him for whatever reason, doesn't make any difference, he's wrong. You can't be going around hating people. That is what Satan did. He hated God, the very being that created him. The God that created Satan began to hate him. And he had great resentment. And not only did he hate God, he began to think of himself as quite great, quite wonderful. So wonderful that he considered himself better than God. And his desire was to take God's place, which meant he had to get rid of God. Okay, he lies in wait for him. He rises up against him, verse 11, and he smites him mortally that he die and flees into one of these cities. He takes off and tries to get away. Well, that's a different ballgame. Then the elders of the city shall send and fetch him. They go grab him. Or scoop him up, as they say, and deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood. In other words, they turn him over to the relatives that he may die. Okay? God pronounced sentence on the person who hated, not the person who had a true accident. Okay, and so with that in mind, let's go to Matthew, the 5th chapter. This is where it comes down to us. And we want to make sure that we aren't thinking like Satan. I guess that's the whole bottom line of the story here, of the sermon. You need to understand, we need to understand how Satan thinks, how people come to this murderous viewpoint, and how this thing of hatred is the key. That's why Christ called Satan a murderer, because he hated and he lusted. Remember? He told the Pharisees, the lust of your father, Satan. He lusted. He wanted something that didn't belong to him. And when he found out he couldn't have it, or tried to have it, that drove him to resent it and get angry and hate, and then that leads, of course, to murder. Because hatred is a form of murder. And isn't this interesting in Matthew, the fifth chapter? I know Bob Fay in the Bible study videos has already gone over this, as far as I know he has. But notice that murder or hatred, or murder and hatred, I should say, is the first example Christ used in explaining how to keep the law of God spiritually. This is something that the Pharisees just didn't get. Verse 17, think not that I'm come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm come to not to destroy, but to fulfill or to amplify and explain and make replete and fill up the meaning of the law, the spiritual part, which he already explained way back in the Old Testament. For very truly I say to you in verse 18 that nothing's going to pass out of the law. It's always going to be there till everything be fulfilled. And then notice verse 19. Whosoever there shall break one of the least of these commandments and shall teach men to do it, and that it's okay, he's going to be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So we're here to learn God's true commandments and to follow them, not to try to get around them or to justify or say, well, it didn't say this, you know, it said that and the technical meaning and all this business. God doesn't look at that. He looks at the spirit and he looks at our attitude. And verse 20, and he said, I say unto you that except your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. What does he mean? Very simply, that the scribes and the Pharisees did all these things. They were Pharisees, so they did things. They checklist righteousness, as I call it. And lots of people, even in the church, have fallen into that through the years. And I've talked about that already. That is one of my pet peeves that I have preached against for 20-some years. Because it's so easy to fall into this Pharisaical type thinking and then thinking that, oh, I'm doing good. But they're missing the spiritual aspect. For I say unto you that except your righteousness exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. It has to be spiritual. It has to be the right attitude, just like we read there in Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy. Okay, first example of this, he says, this is how your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. This is how you do it spiritually. This is what God really looks at. And what's the first example? It could have been having true gods, you know, not having idols. He could have talked about keeping the Sabbath. He could have talked about honoring your parent. He could have talked about any one of the Ten Commandments. What's the first one he uses? Murder. Which is the one that he referred to when he referred to Satan in telling these Pharisees? Murder. That he was a murderer from the beginning because he hated, because he lusted, which led to hatred. It's not a little thing, brethren. It's something that we have to be alert to. You have heard that, you know, of old time you should not kill. Well, whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. And I say to you, if you're angry, then you're going to be in danger of the judgment. And he goes on for a long time mentioning all different aspects of this thing of hatred and the attitude that we need to have in verse 23 with our brother, that if we have aught against them, let's get that straightened out. We don't want to have these lingering resentments and bitterness, and which leads to the root of bitterness. Don't be trying to go to God with your gift in verse 24 until you've gotten things straightened out with your brother. It's a big thing. It's not a little thing. It's the first example. He said, agree with your adversary quickly. This is just good wisdom. But also, just put this behind you. Don't be going on holding grudges. And, I've had people say, it may take me a year, but I'll get that guy. I'll get him. Is that right? Well, somebody's going to get you if you keep going along like that. Agree with your enemy quickly. Let's get rid of this stuff. While you are in the way with him, in other words, resolve the problem, lest at any time your adversary deliver you to the judge and the judge deliver you to the officer and they throw you in prison and you won't get out until everything, you know, the last penny is paid. It's just not worth it. Just get it taken care of. Resolve it. Nothing's that big a deal, although it may seem so at the beginning. And then he goes on and gives other examples of the commandments. But again, this is a focus on our spiritual attitude, the way we think. And once again, it always comes back to that. It always comes back to how we think, how we, what our true motivation is. What was Satan's motivation? To kill, to take over, and all the resentment. He spread that to a third of the angels. Can you imagine? Who knows how long that took? Doesn't say in the Bible how long it took for him to deceive a third of the angels. But he worked on him. See what he did with Adam and Eve? Didn't take too long. He's good at it. And he just kept dripping the poison. Yeah, look at what God's doing. Yeah, look at this. Look at that. That's not fair. That's no good. Now, if I were in charge, isn't that exactly what David's son did? For a couple of years, he spent at the gates of the city, and everybody that came in and out, oh, well, if I were in charge, I'd do it this way. I'd do it that way. He didn't know that once he made his attempted coup and drove David out of the city and seemed like he had won, he didn't know 6 months later he'd be hanging by his hair, Absalom is the individual, with a spear in his stomach. It looked like he was making good progress. He had slowly subverted all these leaders and these people. Follow me. Yeah, David's not fair. I know, he's my father, but da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's how Satan works. He works a little bit at a time. He keeps dropping the poison. And, of course, our human nature naturally goes along with that. And we tend, yeah, that's right. And so we want to be on guard. And, of course, we don't want to be allowing ourselves to go on with hatred in our own minds. So hopefully when you see these things happening around us, you will be alert to where what the motivation is, where it's coming from, and you'll be on guard for it in your own life.